You are listening to the
World Extreme Medicine Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the World Extreme Medicine Podcast. Today we're very lucky to be joined by Lucy Williams, a pediatric nurse who has recently returned from a deployment to Gaza with Médecins Sans Frontières. She's joining us from Slovenia, where she's just finished teaching on a WEM course. Welcome to the podcast, Lucy.
Hi, Marcus.
It's great to have you here. And let's get straight into it. I know this isn't your first MSF deployment. Where have you been before and what took you to Gaza?
Yeah, so I mean, I joined MSF almost 10 years ago. So quite a few projects with them. So on the Syrian border, in Jordan, a couple of times in South Sudan, and then Ethiopia on the border of South Sudan. I left my NHS job in January and emailed MSF basically and said, I'm available for a very short period of time, thought it highly unlikely that I would go anywhere. But had been following the war in Gaza since it started on the 7th of October, felt very useless at home, not being able to do anything, really. And I got a phone call from MSF asking if I'd go out to Gaza for a month to work with them. So obviously had to think it through a bit. But I think I would have felt very bad if I hadn't have gone. So it was the perfect opportunity at the perfect time.
What are some of the practical aspects of that process? So it must be, as you say, lots to think about, and certainly of all the places to go, one of the scariest, but perhaps also, you know, feel like there's the most need. What's the run up like? How do you prepare to deploy?
A lot of admin, to be honest. So because I hadn't worked with MSF for a few years, I had to update everything. So like the boring stuff, like DBS checks, my CV, all of that type of stuff, visas to get in and out of Egypt. But then, as you said, Gaza is not a safe place. It's quite a dangerous place. So mentally preparing both myself and probably my partner and my family. So really thinking about the risks of going to Gaza in itself, trying to prepare people and explain that although I'm going, it's not unlikely, I guess, trying to weigh the risks and benefits and trying to explain the reason why I wanted to go and preparing them that they might not be able to communicate with me while I'm out there. And then spending a bit of time kind of revise. I only had about just over a week to decide and then pack up and go. So, and I was also on holiday. So a lot of time kind of packing and getting stuff together, and thinking about what I wanted to take, what would be useful, what wouldn't be useful, what would the staff out there need. So buying lots of coffee and chocolate for them.
Well, it's good to know that even with the most interesting and exciting jobs, there's also lots of e-learning and admin to be done. Now, I suppose for those people like yourself that have been to some sort of quite remote, dangerous places, what kind of information were MSF able to offer around what was the perceived level of risk? How far away did you expect to be from the front line, from the fighting? Did that turn out to be true?
So MSF were very, very honest with us. So you do lots of briefings before you go away anywhere. So everybody I spoke to from the UK office, the French office, the Egypt office, the Jerusalem office, so all of them gave the opportunity that I could pull out at any point, and made it clear that there was risks with going. So it was a bit of a strange one, because so many people were saying you don't have to go and you can pull out at any time. I was wondering whether I was a bit crazy to go. I got to speak to somebody who'd just been in, and she'd said that she felt relatively safe while she was there. They told us, you know, if there was, they would be able to evacuate us at some point if something did happen where we were. That being said, I mean, there were airstrikes about 300 metres away from where we were living. There were incidents with MSF accommodation for our national staff. So that got targeted whilst we were out there. So there were definitely incidents, and perhaps things were a bit closer than I was expecting while we were out there.
Gosh, goodness me. An awful lot to consider. And you mentioned you flew via Egypt. What was that like, and what were your first impressions arriving in Gaza?
Yeah, so it was a bit of a weird one. So I've been to Egypt quite a few times before. I like Egypt. So we got into Cairo, we had some more briefings there, and then we took our bags and some other medical supplies with us and went on a convoy across the Sinai. You then get to a border crossing point, which is Rafah border crossing. And it's really difficult to describe, kind of coming from a country like Egypt, which feels relatively normal. It's a holiday destination. It's normal life is going on, and you kind of take a bus journey a couple of 100 meters away, and you kind of exit the border crossing, and there are airstrikes. You can see the smoke billowing up. You're driving past just people who have set up tents on sides of buildings. There are buildings that are bombed out. People are looking for food, and there's people everywhere, kind of in this small town where normally people don't, there's not that many people there. There's 1.4 million people roughly, crammed into this city, and they've just got tents up everywhere. It's very strange.
Gosh, yeah, I suppose trying to picture the photographs and videos we've seen, and yeah, amazing being there. It must have been an incredible shock.
Yeah, it's I think where we were, so the photos of Rafah, I mean, it felt very different to kind of the photos you're seeing from Gaza City, from the north. There were definitely a lot more buildings intact in Rafah, I mean, at the moment. But yeah, it was very difficult, particularly coming from, I think, driving across the border. You're just so close from one country to the other. It was a really strange experience.
And how long did you drive once you were inside Gaza, and where were you heading to? Where were you based for that month?
So we were based in Rafah, so our hospital was in Rafah, and then we were staying more in the Almawasi region, which is near the beach.
And who was there with you? What team were you joining?
So we had a team of about six international staff with MSF, so that's who I was living with, and that's where our office was based. And then I was joining a team of staff from Gaza, so nurses, so MSF nurses, who had been working in projects in Gaza before, who had been displaced into the Rafah region. And then yeah, we were working with them.
Nice. And what setting were you in? Was it at a hospital, a small clinic? How big, and what kind of facilities did you have to work with?
Yeah, so it was a hospital. So we had an outpatient department. So we were seeing about 150 patients per day, providing physiotherapy, wound dressings, and then new consultations. Then we had two 30-bedded inpatient wards. So for males, females, and children. And on both wards, we had sedation rooms. So the whole hospital, so everything we were doing was post-op burns and trauma care. And then we had a small procedure room, which almost made it to an operating theatre, so we could do skin grafts, flaps, and huge debridements.
Yeah, war injuries through and through by the sounds of it. And obviously you're a pediatric nurse by training here in the UK. Was this just a pediatric hospital, or were you seeing adults as well?
My role and it has been before, so it's more management. So I was supervising the supervisors that were there. The nurses in Gaza are very competent, they're very good at their jobs. So it was more of a managerial perspective. Previously, when I worked in Jordan on the Syrian border, it was similar. So again, war surgery that we're providing. So I've had some experience, about a year's experience before, of kind of dealing with those types of wounds.
Gosh, and what was that like? As a manager, I know you're pretty senior in the UK, but what kind of things were you doing day to day? What was a normal day like, if there can be a normal day in a war zone?
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, it was different. So we were traveling to the hospital every morning around 8 o'clock. It was obviously an emergency project, but it had been set up for a couple of months by the time I'd got there. So a lot of it was kind of going on the ward round, looking at patient flow, patient management, boring tasks like recruitment, rosters, finance, and then we were trying to scout out what else needed to happen. So obviously the health needs in the region are really high. So like I went to look for a couple of sites to possibly start up some primary healthcare. We also, you need to have the possible plan of evacuation for the hospital. So a lot of things we're looking at: mass casualty plans, looking at buffer stock in case we have to leave, so the stock stuck left in the hospital. And also looking at HR needs as well. So if we have to evacuate from the hospital, that there's still staff there able to look after the patients. And that was kind of the day-to-day tasks, yeah.
Jeez, sounds like a fascinating job. And any particular cases or patients? You mentioned you joined on the ward rounds. Anything that really has stuck with you, or particularly complex or interesting cases you had to deal with?
No, definitely. I mean, I think there was definitely a whole family that stuck with me. So, and I'm sure they won't mind me telling you their story, because they've told it before to MSF and also on other platforms. But they had been, so often with blast injuries, there are a lot of burns. So whether it's from the initial blast or whether it's from like a cooking gas in the house. So we had a family that walked into our outpatient department, and they were covered in burns, very malnourished. There'd been a blast injury in their house, and they'd caught on fire. So it was kind of the whole family. And they'd been stuck. They managed to put themselves out, but they'd been stuck there because they couldn't get out of the area because there were more strikes happening. They managed to get to a hospital and have initial treatment. Then the hospital came under siege, so they were stuck in the hospital, unable to get proper treatment. Sadly, a couple of the family members died of sepsis because their wounds weren't being treated. And eventually they managed to walk quite a lot of the way or get some transport down to where we were, which is, the Gaza Strip's small, but it's a significant way to walk with those types of wounds. And I think I was just really struck by the amount of pain they're in, the children that were sat in the outpatient department covered in old bandages, eating bread. They hadn't eaten bread for a month or something like that. So they were really kind of the family that really struck me. And we were able to provide some care to them, so enough that we covered their burns, there were skin grafts. We managed to provide some physiotherapy so they could use their hands again, but it's only really the basics. So in Gaza at the moment, there's no more we can do, really. They need proper reconstructive surgery and burns management. And I think really, yeah, they were the family that stuck with me the most.
So that sounds like an awfully harrowing story and something to deal with. How were things day to day different to what you may have expected? So you had lots of briefings and clearly people had prepared you for what the role would be. But was there anything that came as a shock or completely different to how you may have pictured it?
No, so I think I was prepared for the role. I think what I'd seen in the media and kind of all the images I'd seen out of Gaza was a lot from the north. So I think in the south at the time I was there, although people were living in a really uncomfortable situation, and at times definitely things were happening that we weren't involved with, we weren't seeing the worst of what was happening, if that makes sense. As my time went on, and I was only there for a month, we saw a lot of worse things. So we saw the patients who were lacking food, we saw these patients who weren't getting treatment. So in a way it was similar to what I was expecting, but also a bit different. Yeah,
I mean, clearly things are evolving in Gaza day to day, week by week, and it's very hard to predict. Have you been in touch with the team out there? How have things been since you've left, and how have things progressed?
Yeah, I mean, just before I left, members of our team went up to Shifa Hospital. So we still had staff based in Shifa. They went to do like an explo up there. So the hospital was functioning. It had about 250 inpatients. They had, I think, three operating theatres that were functioning. We sent out supplies to our staff. They were super keen to get our clinic started again, and they were sending pictures via WhatsApp of like their drugs cupboard really nicely sorted. And then I think I, what, 4 days later, it was under siege again, and it's mostly destroyed the hospital. So I think that's a really tough part of working in Gaza. I've never had the, you're trying to, it's really difficult to set things up because you just don't know when it's going to stop or whether it's going to be able to work. You don't know what's going to happen. I've been in touch with a couple of members of staff, and I just think it's very hard for them. The responses I've got when I've asked how they are, they've said, we're still alive as you left us.
Gosh, gosh, again, how absolutely traumatic that must be. And I suppose we've touched on some of the bits, very difficult bits. Was there anything, I don't know if this may sound like a weird question, but anything that you enjoyed, or what was, anything that wasn't awful and that difficult?
Yeah, I mean, I think working with the national team, they were absolutely amazing. They were probably the most dedicated team I've ever worked with. I think because they were going through what was happening, as were their patients, they just wanted the best care for their patients. We had a really nice time with the children. So we had activity evenings with the children, well, afternoons with the children. So story times, played a movie for them. Doing arts and crafts, and the staff themselves, they were just great. Although the whole situation is really difficult and very depressing, and a lot of the time they were really sad and very anxious about what was happening, you know, you still make a bond, you still had like quite a lot of banter while you were working in the hospital as well. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah, those little moments. And I know you're a big runner, very good runner. What was day-to-day life like? Were you able to, I suspect you probably weren't able to run too far. Were you able to, what were your evenings like when you'd finished work? Where were you living, and what was that part of it like?
Yeah, so we had to leave the hospital quite early due to security. And on our road back, it was absolutely packed full of people trying to move, trying to sell things. So we actually got back to our accommodation at probably around 4:30, 5 p.m. The house we were living in was like an old beach holiday home, almost on two levels. It was interesting, a bit like Disneyland. But yeah, I mean, the evenings were mostly doing admin tasks, or having meetings. And then otherwise, yeah, so running wasn't really possible. I did a couple of runs, but it was, I don't even know how far it was. They were maybe about 100 meters backwards and forwards. Not very inspiring.
No, save up all your energy for when you get back.
Exactly.
And what was communications like? So you mentioned meetings in the evening. Were those with the team on site, or were you able to be in touch routinely with MSF offices in Europe and Egypt?
So we sometimes had some meetings with the coordination team. So they were based in Jerusalem, but mostly it was like between our staff inside the expat house.
Nice.
Yeah. Comms were better than I thought they would be. So we were able to use WhatsApp, and we had Wi-Fi most days.
Good. All right. That must make things easier day to day. And what's it like being home? I know you've been home for a month or so now. How's it been adjusting back, and perhaps compared to some of your other deployments?
I think it's always very hard to come back from a humanitarian project. You have, on one hand, relief, because it's always nice to come home. But on the other side, you always have that aspect of guilt that you're lucky enough that you have that passport, that you can come home and you can choose when you come home. And I think this has been definitely harder than a lot of other returns home, because most of the other teams, although they've been in not very nice places, that you don't have that worry. You don't have, you know, there's an impending Rafah incursion. If that happens, I don't know what will happen to the hospital. I don't know what will happen to the patients. I don't know what's going to happen to the team. So I mean, I guess every day I'm wondering, am I going to get a message saying that we've lost one of our team members.
Gosh, yeah, what a tough burden to have to deal with. Gosh, and have you got plans to go back? Are there still expatriate teams flying out on month by month rotations? What does the future hold as far as you can sort of predict it?
Yeah, so I mean, I said that I offered to go back next month. I don't think they actually have a gap next month. Again, we're unsure of what's going to happen. I think if there's a ground invasion in Rafah, it'd be very difficult for humanitarians to work in that area. We already know what's happened with World Central Kitchen, and that's before a ground invasion, and I know things are getting more tense. It would be something to definitely think about before I went back in.
Gosh. Well, I mean, that's been a pretty fascinating insight into your month there. Is there any advice to other people looking to follow in your footsteps, perhaps earlier in their careers, who want to pursue some of the opportunities that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think anyone that's interested in working in the humanitarian field, then they should go for it, definitely. I think have a look at what you want to do, what type of work you want to do, research it really well, research the organisation that you want to go with. I work with MSF because I agree with their values, and I agree with what they do. I think it's really important to go to a project where you can see that they're doing some good, and I think sometimes there's a risk that there's not. Go do your tropical nursing or medicine diploma, come on the WEM humanitarian course, it's very good. And yeah, just work toward, have a look and see what the recommendations are for the organisation you want to work for, and then work towards that.
Brilliant. Thank you. That's been a really fascinating and moving insight into your work there, and another part of a really inspiring career. Thank you so much for your time, and I'm sure lots of our listeners will be keen to meet you on a WEM course sometime soon, wherever that may be. So thanks again, Lucy, and look forward to hearing what you do next.
Brilliant. No, thank you.
Thanks for listening to the episode. Please feel free to rate, review and subscribe on whichever platform you're listening to. Please also head over to the World Extreme Medicine website, where you can find more engaging content on extreme medicine webinars and indeed the collection of courses from our global network, including humanitarian, disaster relief, expedition, space, military, tactical and performance medicine. Thanks again.